as well.
Next case for argument is Lavallee versus Village of Melrose Park. Mr. Cooper. Where is Mr. Cooper? It's your turn.
Good morning. Plaintiff Lavallee, and the name is pronounced Lavallee, it appears Lavallis, has asserted that...
Oh, you have to stay in front of the microphone.
...asserted that he suffered an adverse employment action. And I think what this case comes down to is whether or not he suffered a material adverse employment action. Judge Gelman doesn't seem to think so. After this case was filed in the district court, this court rendered a decision in Hall. And in Hall... the court found that when you give a person menial duties, that is, a person specifically employing menial duties, that there could, in fact, be a material adverse employment action as a result. In Plaintiff Lavallee's case, he's a police sergeant. He's a black police sergeant.
So was it his assignment to the midnight shift that was the adverse action, or was it the refusal to transfer him from that shift? What is the adverse action here?
I would say it's something different. I would say that it's isolating plaintiff Lavallee and saying to plaintiff Lavallee, because you're a black sergeant, you are not permitted to direct white officers as are white sergeants.
So that was said.
I'm sorry?
How is that done?
It's diminishing his job responsibilities. Now remember, we're at the motion to dismiss stage.
Right. Can you explain to us, I frankly am a little confused here by, there's an indication there's another sergeant on the midnight shift, is that right?
Correct.
So there are two sergeants?
Correct.
Is only one needed? Is that the theory?
Correct.
Okay, and I assume the other sergeant has more seniority than Mr. Lavallee?
Correct.
And so he doesn't have anything to do as a sergeant. That's your theory?
Not that he doesn't have anything to do, but that he has diminished job responsibilities.
Okay. Let me just raise explicitly with you, Mr. Cooper, one of my concerns here. As you know... there's a lot of discussion in federal employment discrimination cases where courts really want to try to avoid micromanaging. And with a police operation, somebody's got to work the midnight shift.
Correct.
Am I correct in saying you are not arguing? Let me try to put this in a positive framework. But are you arguing that Mr. Lavallee could never fairly be asked to work or ordered to work the midnight shift?
No.
If I understand your position correctly, it is, in essence, a lifelong, career-long exile to the midnight shift as the junior sergeant there is the problem.
That was the problem. He has since been moved.
And what's happened?
I think Mr. Bersani may have more of an explanation as to...
What's happened? What's the change?
I believe he's working day work at this point.
As a sergeant?
As a sergeant.
And he has other policemen under his direction as a sergeant?
Correct. However, if he were here today, he would say to this court that he is still treated differently from white sergeants. He wants...
Are there still two sergeants on the night shift?
I don't know. I can tell you that in the past, It's my understanding there were not two sergeants on the night shift.
So is your argument that the other sergeant, the white sergeant, was assigned to the night shift so that he would give all the directions to the line officers, and Lavallee would have no command function? Is that the
former is correct. I can't speak to the latter. I can't speak to why, or correction, let's reverse that. I can't speak to why that white sergeant was originally placed on that shift. What I can speak to is when my client was made a sergeant, there was an effort to make sure that my client did not instruct white officers, and that my client was placed into a position where he could not function as a sergeant could.
And is the notion but he didn't quit. So is the notion that that this was a humiliation? Is that the...
Yes.
Is that what he wants damages for?
Well, Your Honor, yes, in part. But I'm also looking at the Hall decision, and I'm looking at the timeline of things. This case was filed before Hall. Now, certainly one could argue, before Hall, Christopher Cooper could have walked in and said, hey, use Meritor. You know, look at Harris. There's something there that allows you to assert a hostile work environment claim. I didn't see it. But after Hall, and then this case comes along on appeal, and using rape, my position is I should be permitted to drag Hall in and to show that Plaintiff Lavallee, like Ms. Hall, suffered an adverse action, suffered a material adverse action. Now, Your Honor, if I may go back to Harris and if I may go back to Meritor, let's think about what the Harris court said and what the Meritor court said. An adverse employment action, it doesn't have to be economic. It doesn't have to be tangible. My colleague, Mr. Bassani, is saying to you, hey, look, if there's no economic loss, there's no material adverse action. What I'm saying to you is that if you say to a black sergeant, you can't do the things that white sergeants do because you're black, and of course they're not going to say it in those words, but if that's implied by the behavior, and this brings us to the equal protection claim, which I'll address in a moment, there's a material adverse action. I can't emphasize enough, Harris and Meritor make it crystal clear, a material adverse action is not limited to economic or tangible loss. Moving to the equal protection claim, I think that I have a great deal of respect for Judge Gettleman, but I think he got it wrong in this case. This is a suspect class claim. This is not a class of one claim. So Enquist does not throw this case out.
That's clear.
Mm-hmm. Right. So then Mr. Bassani makes a good point. He makes a very good point. And he says, okay, if the equal protection claim is in, where's the material adverse action? And then I say to this court, look at Harris. Look at Meritor. Harris and Meritor make clear it doesn't have to be economic. It doesn't have to be tangible. Then I ask this court to look at its own decision in Hall. And I understand Mr. Bersani has it right. Hall complained about a lot of things, not just that she was delegated to performing menial tasks. But I bet you if Hall walked in and said, if that's all she argued was that she was subjected to menial tasks, and if there were enough of them, I think this court would have ruled the same way.
I don't think Hall was the innovation that you describe.
And I can see that.
It's a fairly straightforward theory.
Right.
Title VII talks about the conditions of employment, terms and conditions of employment. That's
right.
Broad. We don't want to micromanage. But if, despite providing somebody the title and the pay, you don't provide the comparable authority, experience, and opportunities for advancement, if it's serious enough, then it's been established for a long time that that's a viable claim. I frankly didn't see any real allegations of a hostile environment other than a conclusion. But
that's why I cite to Rabe, Your Honor, because I am saying that Hall sort of changes the playing field. And I do agree that someone could have said to me, well, you could have used, say, Meritor, right? But I think that Hall makes crystal clear that Lavallee and any other person of color who asserts in a complaint, we're not at summary judgment, who asserts in a complaint, my job responsibilities have been diminished because I'm black. In particular, I'm not permitted to do the things that the white sergeants are able to do because I'm black. In my mind, that's a material adverse action. I can't see how it would be anything else.
How did you get into the rhetoric of constructive demotion, which winds up producing nothing but confusion in this case? Where did that concept come from?
Well, Your Honor, certainly the intent wasn't to confuse anyone. We have constructive discharge. If the term is analogous with a different set of facts, in this case, he hasn't been discharged.
It's not. The reason that this is so, I'll take a shot at trying to straighten it out.
Okay.
Okay. If you had a case like, and I've forgotten what, not O'Neill, but Simpson against Borg Warner, where the employee asked for a voluntary downgrade because conditions were so miserable after her promotion, then the reasoning, the analogy, kind of makes sense. But it's not comparable, and for you, it's a blind alley if you buy into this notion of constructive demotion, because it winds up being a much more demanding standard, and I think that's what may have led to some confusion in the district court's opinion. All you need to show is a significant material, choose the adjective, adverse difference in the terms and conditions of employment, and one that's significant enough without direct economic consequences. The courts will say, as reluctant as we are to micromanage this sort of thing, this is still enough.
I appreciate Your Honor's explanation, and I certainly I buy into it. Your Honor, if I may, just quickly address the Peters and Moore issues. That is, you file an EEOC charge, or sometimes referred to as a Form 5. The plaintiff doesn't tell his life story, doesn't say everything in that EEOC Form 5. And Judge Gettleman had it right. It makes sense that a great deal of what Mr. Lavallee put into his complaint related back to the EEOC Form 5, or at least the contents of it, and that the events that grew out of what was described in the EEOC Form 5 certainly relate back. I want to call attention to Amtrak versus Morgan and Turner versus the Saloon. And that's how it's phrased, the Saloon. 579 F3rd, correction, 595 F3rd, 679. So in Turner, what the court says is, hey, you can't, a discrete act from the past outside of the statute statutory time period, it's out. It's a discrete act. But you can still assert liability as to general conduct. Behavior alleged outside the statutory time period is permissible for the purposes of assessing liability, so long as an act contributing to that hostile environment takes place within the statutory time period. 684 through 685. The fact that Lavallee didn't run into this court or run downstairs within 90 days of his first complaint, that's a nothing. It's a nothing because he can still talk about, he can still allege discriminatory behavior, not necessarily a discrete act. I mean, Turner makes clear it can't be a discrete act that fell outside of the statutorily defined time period. So all this discussion around time barred, it's just not germane to why we're here today.
Okay, why don't you save the remainder of your time for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor.
So we'll hear from Mr. Bersani.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Mike Bersani, on behalf of the Village of Melrose Park and its Chief of Police, Sam Patassi, who are the appellee's defendants in this matter. Your Honors, the primary issue in this case is whether the plaintiff has suffered a materially adverse employment action sufficient to state plausible claims for race discrimination and retaliation under both Title VII and Section 1983. Judge Gettleman stated that he didn't, and we're asking the court to affirm that decision.
Forbid him to exercise any supervisory authority. That would be quite a humiliation, wouldn't it? I mean, it's like telling a judge, you can be a judge, but you can't hear any cases.
In theory, yes. But
what do you mean in theory?
Well, because the plaintiff has an obligation to plead that claim that's plausible.
Plausible.
He says he's been exiled to the midnight shift with less authority indefinitely. Why is that not actionable?
Well, first of all, what he alleged in the complaint is that he was placed on an undesirable shift where he seldom gets to exercise supervisory duties by virtue of the fact that it's on the midnight shift. Well, that's not the same thing as saying.
Sorry, but do you agree? Is there another sergeant on the midnight shift?
Right now, it's different now than it was a few years ago. Right now, they're on rotating shifts, but there are two sergeants and a lieutenant on every shift right now. At the time of Sergeant Lavallee's promotion to sergeant, there was only one lieutenant and one sergeant. The other two shifts, and these were permanent shifts at the time, had one lieutenant and two sergeants. So this was the only shift that did not have a second sergeant. At the time that he was promoted with another individual. There were two vacancies. One was on the permanent midnight shift, and the other was on a day shift. And so since Sergeant Lavallee and the other sergeant and the other individual were at the top of the promotional eligibility list, both were promoted. The chief of police exercised his managerial decision to place one on the midnight shift and the other on the day shift. I can explain why, but I'd have to go outside the pleadings.
He alleges that when he was promoted and put on the night shift, he wasn't allowed to make the decisions, to exercise the authority that his sergeant exercises.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't that be materially adverse employment condition?
Because it has to be significant, Your Honor. It has to be significant. The case law says
significant to me, as I say. I mean, suppose you say to a judge, well, we're promoting you, we're making you a court of appeals judge, but we're not actually going to allow you to hear any cases.
Yeah. What he alleged in his complaint is that by virtue of being placed on the midnight shift, he doesn't get to supervise or exercise that authority as much as he would on another shift. That's his allegations, and that's where it ends. There's nothing
further.
I think
that's his only allegation.
I think it is.
It's maybe not very clear. I'm looking at clause or paragraph 30 of the complaint that after uh, Now, it's not very clear, but if you read 2930, I think he's saying there was already there was a sergeant on the midnight shift. He's promoted to sergeant. Defendant, the plaintiff is promoted to sergeant, put on the midnight shift, but not allowed to make any what he calls sergeant level and law enforcement decisions. So stripping him of his normal authority as a sergeant that he would have, regardless of what shift he was on. So why isn't that a sufficient allegation?
It's our position that that allegation is just simply too vague to state a plausible claim. More factual enhancement would be needed under Twombly and Iqbal to make it more plausible.
Well, I don't think there's anything implausible about it. I understand it's vague. It's vague. That would usually call for, you know, a repleting, not a dismissal, or a dismissal without prejudice.
Well, and the plaintiff was given several opportunities by Judge Gettleman to replete his claim, and he's gone back and forth on what the adverse action truly is.
It's a kind of complicated, subtle problem because you can't complain the first time or even maybe the first 3 months that you get assigned, right, to a shift assignment you don't like. This is the kind of thing that he's describing here is something that doesn't become clear as an adverse action. But you're saying it's still not an adverse action.
It's not. And, that's our position, right.
Right. So it really, it's only when it becomes reasonably clear that it's permanent or indefinite that there's really potential for a plausible claim.
Well, in this particular situation, Sergeant Lavallee was promoted on February 5, 2011, placed on the midnight shift at that point in time. Yet he remained on that shift 14 months before he ever requested either to be placed on another shift or
right, but
to have another
position. If he complained earlier, you would have said, no, there's no problem, go home, right? Or just stay where you are, right?
I don't know what would have been said at the time, but my point is that if the claim is that this was significant, then why didn't Sergeant Lavallee make a request for a different shift change or a different position earlier
like,
in time?
Excuse me, counsel, but that's like arguing that the person suffering from a hostile environment should have complained sooner, and we're going to dismiss their claim because they didn't file soon enough before when it was really starting to get hostile. And that really puts people in an impossible position. He eventually asked for a change. We're told he got some indication, I guess, that this was permanent or indefinite. Maybe things have changed since then. We don't know. But I have trouble rejecting this entirely on the pleadings as a as not a materially adverse action.
Your Honor, all I can say is that under the case law, that the case law that has recognized claims where there's an allegation of diminished job responsibilities have always involved more facts alleged than just this.
What is the standard term for a midnight shift?
Standard term? I'm not sure I understand.
Length of period. How long are you assigned to as a night shift sergeant?
Well, this was a permanent shift. I mean, I'm not sure I understand. Of course not. I mean, you know,
well, what
circumstances
do you mean, of course
can
not.
Change.
Is there a standard term? Or if
I'm not aware of any judgment.
Well, that's kind of critical, right? Because what if it's a year term? You have to, if you're assigned to day shift, night shift, in between shift, weekend shift, whatever you have, it's a year. Then he would be reluctant to make a complaint, wouldn't he, before his year was up?
That would be speculation. I don't know what.
Yeah, it is speculation, but this is a complaint, right?
I mean,
it's a discovery, you know, to figure out.
Well, I guess that's maybe, and I apologize for interrupting, Judge. Maybe that's the issue here is trying to apply this limiting principle of an adverse employment action between the chief of police discretion to manage his department as he sees fits versus something that is truly adverse in a significant way. This complaint does not allege anything.
It's adverse to strip a person of his authority. But I mean, it must be. Yeah. You become a sergeant, you get to order the line officers around. That must be a part of your job satisfaction.
But the complaint, the way I read it, does not go that far, Your Honor. What the complaint is, and I'm looking at paragraph 19 of the complaint, which says that reassignment to MID might materially affected plaintiff's job responsibilities, so much so that his job responsibilities were significantly changed and diminished with his placement on midnights. So in where he seldom was permitted to perform sergeant duties. What he's saying there is that by virtue of being placed on midnights, he doesn't get the opportunities to supervise as much as he would on other shifts. Now, that would apply to anybody who's placed as a supervisor on that midnight shift. There would be no difference. There's no further factual enhancement at all in this complaint to explain, for example, did the chief of police give a directive to the supervisors on that shift not to allow Sergeant Lavallee to supervise other officers?
Well,
there's
not,
nothing
you know,
of that nature in the complaint at all.
Why not submit interrogatories, right?
Well, I guess the plaintiff still has to...
Your argument, so... But...
I can move on to the hostile work environment claim, Your Honor. That is not alleged in the complaint whatsoever.
I don't see any difference between...
I'm sorry, Judge.
A hostile environment is just another way of characterizing his charge, isn't it? What's the difference?
I think he's
just
alleged
words,
it as a separate claim.
What does it mean? What's the difference?
Well, there's nothing. Well, the difference is one is
materially adverse action and hostile work environment.
Well, there's nothing alleged in the complaint typically.
What's the difference between these two concepts?
Well, one is a tangible employment action that would typically involve, usually involve some economic consequences.
Which one is that?
The other, well, which would be a discrete act. The other would be the work conditions are so objectively and subjectively pervasive that it changed his work conditions. It's our position that the allegations in the complaint don't amount to that. There's not enough factual enhancement in the complaint to give rise to a hostile work environment claim, and just merely alleging that I was on a shift where I wasn't allowed to exercise as much supervisory duties as I would another shift is not enough to state either an adverse employment action or a hostile work environment claim. In the courts have, you know.
Was he the only, when he was midnight shift sergeant, was he the only sergeant?
No.
The night shift?
No, there would be one lieutenant and two sergeants on that shift.
But isn't his complaint, I mean, I agree it's ambiguous, but isn't it consistent with the proposition that either the lieutenant or the other sergeant would not allow him to, or that the lieutenant told the sergeant or the sergeant, the white sergeant decided that the black sergeant would not be able to give orders to any of the line officers, isn't that?
No, I don't believe it is consistent.
He's not alleging that.
No, I do not think he is. I think he's alleging by virtue of the fact that he was placed on a shift that maybe doesn't have as much activity as another shift.
Why doesn't it have more activity?
Well, I'm just suggesting that that would be a reason why.
Does the midnight shift may be slower. Have less activity than the day shift?
It may be slower than a day shift.
I don't know.
Shift.
Isn't there more crime at night?
Maybe, maybe not. It's not just crime.
Maybe,
but
maybe not.
Well,
so you don't know, in other words.
No, there.
Well,
it's not just a matter of responding to
should he be alleging that there's all this activity at night and he'd have opportunities if he'd been given them to command people and send them into criminal neighborhoods?
Yeah. No, it's not an issue of just
stuff.
It's not an issue of just crimes. It would be response to calls.
Pardon?
And it's not an issue of just responding to reports of crimes, but also just service calls. And so there may be more service calls on other shifts than the midnight shift.
I
don't know.
It's more exciting
just
to command action against criminals than saving someone's cat from a dog, right?
I think there's another problem with that hostile work environment claim, and that is that it was not alleged in the EEOC charge whatsoever. And this court in Dandy and Hottenroth concluded that they really are separate issues, that if someone's going to claim a race discrimination claim based upon an adverse employment action, and if they're going to allege hostile work environment, that hostile work environment claim is a separate act. It has to be part of that EEOC charge. If it's not, then the plaintiff cannot raise that claim in the federal lawsuit, and that's what this court said in Dandy and Hottenroth. So I disagree with counsel on the issue of the Hall case. That involved much more facts than just I wasn't allowed to perform certain duties.
Much more facts than the complaint, are you saying?
I believe so. There were the allegations that... I don't
remember
if it was
on
a motion to dismiss or summary judgment.
Pardon?
I don't remember if it was a motion for dismiss or summary
judgment. That's critical. Yeah. Obviously.
Summary judgment.
But the plaintiff is using the case.
Then there are going to be more facts.
The plaintiff is using the case, to support his pleading. But in that case there, the plaintiff was excluded from meetings, prevented from speaking with coworkers.
Yes, but how much of that was in the complaint and how much of that was in the evidence?
I don't
recall.
Well,
that's critical, isn't it? Maybe none of that was in the complaint. It was all the evidence. Okay. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Bersani. Well, Mr. Cooper, you have a minute or so. Do you have anything further?
If I may... The complaint shows that before Sergeant Lavallee became a sergeant on the midnight shift, you had a different setup. You had two lieutenants and one sergeant. So suddenly, when a black man is made a sergeant, suddenly there's a need for two sergeants, when... Had the argument is, had Lavallee, or if Lavallee were white, then there would have remained one sergeant on the midnight tour and two lieutenants. And of course, the midnight tour is more active. There's a great deal more happening.
Mr. Cooper, we're over here.
I just.
Teleport trial.
I got you. As to paragraph 19, the word with, my recollection when I wrote this complaint was I was making reference to the fact that prior to the time of promotion, Mr. Lavallee was an officer. So now he's a sergeant. So my use of the term with was not to say that had he worked day work, that he would have had more responsibility, simply to make a reference to now he's promoted and he's thrown onto midnights. And remember, he's not a probationary officer. He's not a new officer. He's been on the job at this point 20-something years. He's done his share of midnights. There's no explanation. And also the complaint points out that there's a white sergeant who's promoted along with him with less seniority. So if we follow the rules... And if we do things fairly, the white sergeant would have gone to midnights, not Sergeant Lavallee.
But there are two separate issues, which I think you confound to some extent. Whether being assigned to the midnight shift is itself a form of, punishment, discrimination or something, and whether once assigned, he wasn't allowed to exercise the same authority as the white sergeant on the night shift, right? Are those two separate, or are they...
Well, if I may just throw in one sentence, Your Honor. Being assigned to the midnight shift by itself, plaintiff isn't asserting that that's punishment. Being assigned to the midnight shift for the reason Sergeant Lavallee was assigned to the midnight shift, and then what happened when he got there, that suddenly he has these diminished responsibilities, that's the issue.
But it wasn't just that he had diminished responsibilities because the midnight shift is quieter than the day shift.
Well, it's not.
But it's not, or we don't know. Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Cooper and Mr. Pisani. We'll take the case under advisement. And